Hello, and welcome back to the Paranormal Podcast. My name is Dan Pacella, lead investigator and co-founder of Orange County, New York Paranormal. If you've been with us before, welcome back. If you're new to the festivities, please make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. And if you're watching the video portion of this on our Facebook and YouTube channel, please hit that like button, subscribe to us, and leave a comment below. We'd love to hear about everybody's paranormal experiences as we continue our conversation into the paranormal. In today's episode, we're going to talk a little bit about an interesting question we received at an event over the summer, which led to an entire line of thinking that we hadn't really gone down that path before. It's the best part about this field is that one thing can happen and then it leads you down a path of self-discovery and education and thought that you'd never seen before. We're also going to preview a couple of upcoming investigations that we have. We have back-to-back investigations coming up over the next couple of weeks, and that poses a unique challenge to folks who investigate the way that we do. So, a lot to talk about today. Can't wait to get started. So, here we go. So as I've mentioned before, we do a lot of events, a lot of public speaking events, a lot of ghost hunts, a lot of different kind of really cool kind of paranormal stuff where we get to meet a lot of interesting people. And the incident that led to this whole conversation we're going to have today occurred in an event we did at Grapevine Farms in Cobleskill, New York. The idea was to do sort of like a cookout slash bonfire kind of thing, where we would kind of tell ghost stories. And it was awesome. We had a great turnout. The bonfire thing didn't really happen. Sorry, Tim. The best we could do there was sort of a bon smoldering, if you will. But you know, hot dogs were good. The snacks were good, even though we never quite got the bonfire going. But there was a group of young adults there who asked some really, really great questions. And we were talking about equipment and evidence, and it was a great conversation with this group. And they brought up one particular thing about evidence, about something that they had captured. And I talked to them about a bunch of different ways that it could be debunked or disproven. You know, just different ways to look at a piece of evidence that would help them determine whether it was paranormal or whether it wasn't. It's a lot of what we do. It's a lot of what most investigators do. And they completely agreed with me and then said, "I completely get it. You're a skeptic like me." And it was one of those things that I heard and my brain goes, interesting. I never have been directly called that. But I'm finding that, you know, more and more, that is the reaction that we get when we question any kind of paranormal story or evidence and try to debunk it or try to prove that it's something natural. And that's what debunking is. It's saying, hey, you know, you think this might be a voice, but could it be this? Could it be this? Could it be this? And, you know, once you eliminate everything it can't be, then you can start to think about what it possibly could be. And that's where you get into the realm of EVPs or light anomalies or shadows. But you have to, you know, you have to say what it isn't first. It's funny because when we do capture a really good piece of evidence, sometimes, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm going, oh, no, I'm going to have to spend a week trying to prove that this isn't something natural. I mean, it's exciting to catch that stuff, but it's a lot of work when you catch something really good because you really don't want to put something out there that isn't legit. But I've never been called a skeptic before, and it got me thinking, is the definition of the word skeptic changing in the field of the paranormal? And it's an interesting question because there's never really been a standard definition. I mean, you know, a dictionary, you know, Webster's dictionary defines a skeptic as a person who questions the validity or authenticity of something purporting to be factual. So to put it into terms of our discussion, a skeptic is someone who doesn't believe in the paranormal. And that does seem to be the standard definition. When you hear the word skeptic in the world of the paranormal, you are thinking this person doesn't believe in spirits or in ghosts or in empaths or in whatever it is that's paranormal. It's interesting because there's so many different ways to look at it. In Zach Bagan's book, Dark World, he's the host of Ghost Adventures, he theorizes that people who classify themselves as skeptics should, by definition, not be hesitant or afraid in a haunted house, an abandoned asylum, or even in their own basement. Because if they truly believe there's nothing there, there should be absolutely nothing to fear. That's a really interesting angle in that, well, if you don't actually believe in it, then you should never give a second thought about a scary situation or anything like that. Now, from the other side, Benjamin Radford's book, Scientific Paranormal Investigation, he puts forth the idea that the only people who should be investigators are people who fit that classic definition of what a skeptic is. So the idea being that by even believing in the paranormal, you have a bias, and therefore you're going to skew the results. Now, I don't completely agree with either point of view, but it is an example of polar opposite approaches to the paranormal field using the same definition to define, using the same definition to describe someone who is a skeptic. And that's fascinating that you can have such a wide range of definitions for the same word. And that's why it struck me odd that someone would use the term to describe me. I mean, if you're familiar with us or our videos, or even in the short time that you may have been listening to this podcast, you know, we try to keep an open mind on everything, you know, but we do believe that these things exist. It's interesting because I've often said, when listening to paranormal testimonial or touring a place for the first time, it's weird to me how comfortable I am. And Emily once told me, if you're new, Emily's my wife and co-founder and another lead investigator for our organization. She said, it's funny, you act like a skeptic when you walk around this, but I know you believe in everything that's going on. And it's why we, as well as many, many other investigators, we question the validity of the evidence we capture. It's what you're supposed to do. Occam's razor, man, that's rule number one. In paranormal investigation, the simplest explanation is usually the right one. It's usually, and most of the time, whatever you pick up, whatever you think you saw, you think you hear, whatever it is, it has nothing to do with the supernatural. It's something that can be explained with a car driving by, or a shadow hitting off a wall strange, or just an old building making old building noises. Most orbs and photos are caused by other things. Lens flares, things driving by, more shadows move across the room are caused by someone moving between the IR light when we investigate at night and the wall. Most faces in the mist are caused by pareidolia. Pareidolia is the term for our brain tends to make faces out of things. Our brain takes, you know, things that have no shape and gives them a shape that we are familiar with. When I was a kid, I used to, fronts of cars. I used to make in my brain they were faces, and some cars were angry and some cars were happy. Leave a comment if you're watching the video of this, if you've ever done that before. I used to do the same thing, weirdly enough, with telephone poles too. It's like they all had a different face, and that's pareidolia. That's what that is. And most potential EVPs or electronic voice phenomena, they can be explained away as some kind of pollution or outside interference. We have to question the validity of everything we investigate. We call it debunking, but call it whatever you want. It's the reason why, of all the pieces we tag when reviewing evidence, we throw out 90% of them. It's why the review process takes so long. The last thing any group wants to do is put out evidence, claim it's paranormal, and have it be easily proved as something else. That is the best way in the world to lose your credibility. There are folks on YouTube, there are YouTube channels devoted to simply looking at people's paranormal evidence and debunking it and calling them fakes. Now, honestly, I think there's a way better use of people's time, and I don't think it enhances the field much to be doing stuff like that. But at the same time, as investigators, we are always trying to put out legitimate paranormal evidence. So, You know, you have to ask those questions. And it's not necessarily to debunk what a person is going through. Those personal experiences are so, so important. But again, it's Occam's razor. Years ago, we had someone reach out to us that they were just determined that there was a spirit like clawing on their windows and so on and so forth, and just on their bedroom window every night, crack, crack, crack. And we asked them to take, you know, send us some pictures of the room. And, you know, we looked at the picture and we're like, well, that's a tree. I mean, that's a really simplistic example, but it's an example of something really simple that was causing something the person thought was paranormal. They trimmed the tree. Guess what? The scratches went away. You know, you have to question it. When Emily, when we first started out, my wife Emily was pushed down the stairs at the Burlington County Prison in New Jersey by an unseen force. We spent weeks dissecting that incident. And in the end, the very fact that when she went down the stairs, she went through me and wasn't slowed down at all, that was the part that didn't add up. My body mass should have slowed her down. I'm a load. But she actually moved quicker. Like, she picked up speed as she collided with me. I'm sorry, but, you know, physics doesn't work that way. Gravity doesn't work that way. We took everything we could into account, and at the end, we decided that when you put all the pieces together, she had to have been continually pushed from the start of her fall all the way down the stairs. We did a Behind the Evidence video about that incident on our YouTube channel and Facebook page if you want to find it. Maybe one day we'll have Emily on to talk about that a little bit more. But in the end, we felt that was a paranormal experience. We felt it at the time, too. We felt it at the time, too. But we waited. You had to eliminate all the other natural options before you could make that distinction. And does that make us skeptics? Maybe that is the new definition. You know, has it flipped from questioning the existence of the paranormal to questioning any kind of paranormal evidence at all? And I mean, that's an important question for anybody in the field. Because definitions are really tricky in the paranormal field. The lack of set definitions and qualifications, it's what keeps the paranormal as a pseudoscience at best. There's no control group. Everyone has their own standards and their own methods, and frankly thinks their way is the right way. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think our way is the right way too. But many people also feel that their definition should be the definition. And while it's human nature to do that, it makes things a little bit tricky, as you can tell. There's no paranormal university or set standards and practices for investigating. There are people who dub themselves professionally trained paranormal investigators. I have no idea where that college is, but once again, they're mainly teaching their own methodology and passing it off as the standard. I'm not saying that's fraudulent. Many of them have years of experience under their belts and wealth of knowledge to share. Experience is the best teacher, but it's their experience. It's their definition. And as the paranormal field lacks these specific clarifications, the result can be splintered opinions and scattered evidence that does not hold up well against even the simplest of scientific method. Now, there's an upside to this. Because there are no strict guidelines or rules or even training to investigate the paranormal, the field is incredibly open. And while this can lead to trouble sometimes, it also allows the community to be really inclusive, which, for the most part, it is. People get into this for different reasons. We study and explore the paranormal because it continues to open our mind to a wide array of concepts and ideas that a lot of people just never, ever consider. We have an insatiable curiosity of the unknown and a passion for helping people that are both the living and the dead. We enjoy sharing that journey and meeting people along the way. But everybody's in it for a different reason. Well, you know, I'm not in it for monetization or trying to get on the Travel Channel. If you're watching this on our Facebook and YouTube channel, you can tell I have a face for radio. I have no business being on a high-def television. But that is the beauty of it, though, if you think about it. Whatever reasons you have for wanting to investigate the paranormal, there's no red tape or boundaries that are keeping you from pursuing your answers. It's all wide open for interpretation, and your point of view is as valid as my point of view, or anybody else's. So in other words, while the lack of standardization in terms of methodology creates an uneven field of study at best, it also allows more people to the party and more points of view to consider. And like it or not, I don't see that changing any time soon. So it's interesting because when you think about those definitions and those standards, and when we host events and we meet new people, everybody has their own thing that they bring to the table. And like I said previously, that's kind of the beauty of it. But it does get confusing. If you go on YouTube and you look up paranormal channels, heck, you go on TV and look up all the different paranormal shows, they're all doing the same thing, but my goodness, are they doing it differently. And whether you love paranormal television or don't love paranormal television, and I could argue it either way, and one of these days that might be the main topic of one of our podcasts, is the problem with paranormal television. It does allow you to kind of pick and choose what you like and the methodologies that you like and the definitions that you choose to accept or not to accept. If you're someone who loves to watch paranormal videos and paranormal content, keep that in mind. I think it's important to understand that just because somebody has one set of definitions for the paranormal does not mean that they are the same. If you ever look in the comment section of a YouTube video on the paranormal, it can be a cesspool. I always say that a video has not been successful until somebody has gone on YouTube and told me that it's something and that I'm a fool and it was a car driving by or it was this or it was that. Somebody who never listened to the evidence with those huge soundproof headphones that we do, someone who wasn't there. My favorite example of that is someone told me that an EVP we caught while on a volunteer investigation at Hyde Hall was a car driving by. If you've never been to Hyde Hall, it's in Glimmerglass State Park outside of Cooperstown, New York, and it is in the middle of absolutely nowhere. It's also in the middle of a state park that closes at 8 o'clock at night, so there are no cars driving by it. But they heard it, said, oh, that's a car driving by. Well, no, you have to take everything into account, and that's, again, no control group. Every location is different, every time is different, every spirit is different, every investigator is different, and every person who investigates and who owns and the staff, they're all different. And man, if you are a believer in scientific method, that's gotta drive you crazy when it comes to the paranormal field. I've learned to love it, and I've learned to hate it. I've really managed to kind of understand that it's a double-edged sword. It allows, you know, 15 people to show up to a ghost hunt and all have a shared enjoyable experience. That's great. But it also leads to some toxicity. I mean, we live in a world now where the comment section of anything can be toxic. But it does also lead to people just saying, well, you don't do it my way, therefore you're wrong, which is really unfortunate. And actually, those kind of things paint the paranormal community in a bad light. You know, it's fun. When we go around to locations, people always say to Emily and I, wow, you guys are like normal people. And it's funny because it happens every single time. And we actually named the podcast is called The Paranormal Podcast, with para in parentheses, because it's become such a running thing that people are shocked that we're normal. I don't know what paranormal investigators these folks have met before us, but I've met many, and they're all very nice people, and all of them, I mean, we're all abnormal in our own beautiful ways, but it always makes me laugh. It's why we called the podcast this. And you just have to understand what your definition of paranormal is and what your definition of these things are. And once you decide what you believe, and if you are a skeptic, whether it be in the true definition or in what appears to be the new definition, or the thousands and thousands of iterations in between. As you watch anything paranormal, whether it's from the top show on the Travel Channel to our little YouTube videos, it's all there for you to interpret. It's all there for you to decide for yourselves just what kind of skeptic or what kind of believer you actually are. And in the end, that's the beauty of it. That is the beauty of the paranormal field. It's why We continue to love it. It's why we continue to do what we do. So it's not changing anytime soon, but if there were standard definitions, if there was a textbook, here's how you do it, here's how you investigate, we would be excluding so many people and so many different ways and methods of doing things. You know, try what you want. There's no rules, and that's great. It can be a little disastrous. We had one location tell us that one of the TV shows there set off fireworks inside the building. I have been racking my brain trying to figure out what paranormal purpose that would serve. If you're subscribing and rating and reviewing, leave a comment to tell me what that would do. If you're on YouTube, Facebook, leave a comment if you have any idea what setting off fireworks would do other than just causing a ruckus. And there's still a warrant for them in the town where they did that, by the way. It's pretty funny. But again, use your own definitions. Go into it with the same open mind that we have to have while we're investigating, while we're reviewing, and while we're taking a look at all these amazing paranormal experiences we've had. So while you're pondering that, I wanted to talk about some of the stuff we have coming up. We are an active paranormal group, Orange County, New York Paranormal. You can find us our website at www.orangecountynyparanormal.com. If you're watching video on Facebook and YouTube, our website's right there. There's a QR code you can scan, go right to our Facebook page, right to our YouTube page. We do share everything. We are doing back-to-back investigations, which may not sound like much. Like, honestly, as an investigator, you're probably like, oh, yes, man, we get to do this two weekends in a row. I mean, we usually space things out a little bit. For a group like us, it's a little tricky to do them that close together. And what I mean by that is that we are, you know, talk about strange definitions. We are what you might call a scientific paranormal group. And I could do a whole other podcast on how that term is problematic and how that definition is weird. But what it really means is that we use equipment. We use cameras. We use digital recorders. We use trail cams. We use thermal cams. We use SLS. We use everything. You name the piece of equipment, we've probably used it at one point. The reason why some of the doing investigations really close together is troublesome is we're using anywhere from 10 to 15 cameras for a location. We are big believers in stationary cameras, and we have invested heavily in the use of stationary cameras. So when we're done with an investigation, there is a lot of footage that has to be reviewed. If we do a 6-hour investigation, and we're using 10 cameras just to make the math easier, that means there's 60 hours of footage that we have to both watch and listen to, which takes 60 hours to do. There's no way to fudge that. You can't, you know, skip through because, you know, a lot of these EVPs, these electronic voice phenomena, they happen when you're not around. So if you do have six hour investigation and you have 10 cameras, that's 60 hours that you're sitting there watching this. Digital recorders. You have to review that too. I always, when we do events, I make the joke that everybody wants to be a paranormal investigator until they have to sit down and watch a room for 6 hours where nothing happens. And that's really it. You know what most paranormal investigating sounds like? You know, you don't get an idea from television. Here's what most paranormal investigating sounds like. You hear that? It's silence. I can't do silence too long on an audio medium, but you get the point. So you're watching the same room, stationary camera, for 6 hours straight, and you have to pay attention to all that. I find it exhilarating. But one of the tests we do whenever we have people who want to investigate with us, I'll send them a 6-hour clip of a room and see if they'll actually look at it, because that's where the rubber meets the road when it comes to being a group like us that uses cameras. And when we do two investigations back to back, 60 becomes 120. And it'd be great, but these are not our full-time jobs. You know, we are ordinary people with an extraordinary hobby, and being ordinary people means that we have full-time jobs and full-time gigs. But we are really looking forward to the work. We're going to be at the Gilboa Museum in Gilboa, New York, and then we're going to be at the Omen Theater in Lyons, New York. Lyons, New York is we've investigated the Museum of Wayne County History there. We investigated there last summer. And we actually did an investigation there in January, which was a stone building that isn't heated in January in way upstate New York was probably not, from a comfortable temperature perspective, the best plan. But as a paranormal investigator, you're always either too hot or too cold anyway. But we'll be doing those two investigations, and in an upcoming episode, you know, we'll talk about the places we've gone. We'll talk about how we prepared and how we go, because a theater and a museum are two very different things, very different histories, and how we look into that and where Emily starts her research on that. But the turnaround time for reviewing that stuff, there's just no way around. You have to watch all the footage. You have to, you know, do your due diligence that we spent the first, you know, half of this episode talking about. Was you have to, you know, take the time. And if we find a lot, well, then we're going to have to do a lot of that, trying to figure out what it is and trying to disprove or prove, or, you know, could it be this? Could it be this? Or maybe perhaps it's this. So there's a lot of that that goes on. But we're looking forward to it. It's good to be back investigating again. We don't do a ton of investigating in the winter months, but other than that one in January, that video will be coming out shortly. That'll be the first one we release. But we're heading into a season where we are going to be doing investigations every couple of weeks, and we'll start having those videos come out, and there'll be links to everything in this feed. So, you know, as we continue our new adventures, we'll constantly be looking back at everything we've done in the past to help us determine what we do in the future. Everything evolves: methodology, equipment, and even definitions. We investigate, review, publish in a constant effort to push and understand more about this world, this plane, this existence, regardless of your definition. It can be enough to make your head spin, especially if you're listening earlier. My head is spinning about this all the time. It can be a lot. But after a while, all that head spinning, all that thinking, all those concepts, they just become, well, normal. See you next time. Take care.